There have been good personality studies done for, I would say, about 30 years. And the reason for that is that we figured out a personality model about 30 years ago that's stable cross-culturally, and it was mostly derived statistically, and it required a fair bit of computational power to derive. And basically, the way that it was derived was that thousands of people were asked hundreds and hundreds of questions, and then computers could figure out how the answers grouped. So if you were likely to say yes to question A and also to question J, maybe that was a tendency across a large group of people, and so you could assume that there was something similar about question A and J, and you could sort the questions into groups. And it turns out that questions about personality sort into five groups. And there's some argument about exactly the right number, but it doesn't matter. It's somewhere between 5 and 7, and you can break the 5 down into 10, but whatever, we've got a pretty good overall descriptive structure, like the periodic table of the elements for personality. If you're an extrovert, man, it's like you want to be where the action is. You want to be where the party is. You're telling jokes and you're setting up social occasions, and you smile a lot and you talk a lot and you want people around you all the time. And a tremendous amount of that is influenced genetically. And you can tell that if you have children, because your children are like that. My son's quite extroverted. Well, my daughter is as well. But, you know, he was a flirt when he was 9 months old. It was ridiculous. My wife used to pack him along on her back on one of those little, and I would do the same thing, on one of those little, you know, those little baby carriers. And I can remember one time we were on a cruise ship, just taking a small cruise from Maine to Nova Scotia. And we got on the boat, and we were wandering through a group of people. And it was like being with a rock star, because he was sitting in the back of the little baby holder, smiling away, you know, like flirting like mad and waving at everyone. And that was there right at 9 months. And so people differ in extroversion, and that's positive emotion. They differ in neuroticism, and that's negative emotion. Some people are much more sensitive to depression and grief and anxiety. Their threshold for threat is a lot lower. Some people are agreeable rather than disagreeable, and agreeable people are very empathic and self-sacrificing. And the empathic part is good, because, you know, it's useful to be empathic, especially if you're caring for people who are in real trouble. But the self-sacrificing isn't so good. That can make you resentful and also decrease the probability that you're going to be successful in your salary negotiations and so forth. So those of you who are agreeable and have a hard time standing up for yourself and fighting, you know, you'll fight for other people but not for yourself, it's a very good skill to develop that ability to watch your resentment and see what you need and then make a case for it. It's a hard thing to learn. People differ in conscientiousness, that's orderliness and industrious, and they differ in creativity, which is openness. And a lot of that's genetic. It's there to begin with. Now, you can move that with the environment, you know, but you know, you have a character. It's there. Liberals are higher in openness. That's trait creativity. And lower in conscientiousness, especially orderliness. And that seems to be because they believe, or their let's say, their niche is an informational niche. They believe that the free flow of information is worth the risk. So that'd be the free flow of people across borders, the free flow of ideas across borders, the free flow of concepts across categories. They'd rather that the borders were permeable. Now, the conservatives are low in openness and high in conscientiousness, especially orderliness, and they take the opposite tack. They think, well, yeah, there's danger in too much openness. There's danger in borders that are too permeable. Things can change too fast. Entire societies can become destabilized, and everyone can end up not knowing which way is up. And the thing is that both of those attitudes are correct. It depends on the time. You know, sometimes things are changing so fast that everybody's knocked off their feet, and things are falling apart. And sometimes things are so rigid that there isn't any new water flowing, and everything's ground to a halt. You see that in corporations very often. where they get ossified and then they collapse. You know, the average Fortune 500 company only lasts, I think now it's only 24 years. And the duration of their occupation of the top Fortune 500 space is getting shorter and shorter every year. You need liberals because now and then the right thing to do is to come up with something new. And you need conservatives because now and then the right thing to do is to do what everybody has always done. So, you know, Silicon Valley tends to be liberal. Everyone knows that. And the reason for that is that there's a tremendous number of entrepreneurs there. And entrepreneurs tend to be high in openness and lower in conscientiousness. So they're creative, but they're also willing to break rules, you know, which you kind of have to do. Hopefully not to a criminal extent. Well, you know, it's tricky when you're trying to establish something new because look at a company like Uber, you know, they had to bend the rules to be successful. And those companies that have rented those scooters out and put them on the streets everywhere. You know, they just kind of went ahead and did it. It's not something an orderly person would do because they'd ask for permission, whereas the people who started these scooter rental companies just said, well, what'll happen if we put them everywhere? And the answer was, that seemed to work. But you have to have a rule-breaking proclivity in order to manage that. But the thing is, if you're an entrepreneur, you need conservative people because once you've figured out how to do something, and then you want to run it algorithmically, you know, you want to run it by the rules, well, then it's the conservative types that are going to be really good at doing that and making sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and show up for work on time and have stable marriages and be reliable. And their problem is it's easy for them to get stuck in a rut. So attend to the person you're listening to as if they might know something you don't. It's like, I really find it interesting to talk to people whose political opinions differ from mine. And for me, that's mostly meant talking to really strong conservatives, because I would say temperamentally I tilt in the liberal direction, although it's very interesting to talk to people who don't share your political views if you listen to them, because they'll tell you all sorts of things about why they think that you just don't understand. And it's not that they're wrong, it's that sometimes they're wrong and sometimes they're right. And the whole point of free speech, as far as I can tell, the deep point of free speech is that, you know, it's all as if we're riding on the back of a giant snake and it's twisting and turning all the time, and we're trying to figure out how to stay in the center so that we don't fall off the sides, you know? And sometimes it's time for a bit of a tilt to the left, and sometimes it's time for a bit of a tilt to the right. And the only way you can tell when that time is by having a discussion about it. It's not the fact that the conservatives are right or that the liberals are right. They're both necessary, annoying as that is. I think there are times when there are objective facts that present themselves in the political sphere, but most of the time political discussion is more, it's more like marital negotiation, you know, and it's right when it works in the world. That would be the first thing. Like, let's say you have a plan and you implement the plan and the plan turns out the way that you expected it to. It's a pragmatic definition of truth. Okay, that plan, flawed, no doubt that it was, imperfect, no doubt that it was accurate enough so that when you implemented it, it justified its own structure. That's a lot of the way we judge truth in the world, right? Is you think you're right if you do something and it works. And that doesn't mean you're 100% right, and it doesn't mean it's going to work forever, but because you're ignorant and because your knowledge is limited, that's kind of what you've got. And so that's one form of truth. And then another form is, well, can we agree in a negotiated manner? I mean, I've been trying to identify 100% truths, the 100% truths, let's say, that sit at the bottom of our societies. And one of the things that I believe to be true is that the idea that the individual is properly sovereign, I believe, is as true as any idea that human beings have ever come up with. I think that that idea works. Not everyone would agree with that. The more complex the situation, the harder it is to extract out something approximating an objective truth. And so then so much of it depends on negotiation and discussion.